Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Junior's ready. Stand by.
Everyone, welcome to this episode of the Bullets and Bourbon podcast. I'm Frank Gao, joined by my co-host Matt Gunlock. We have no guest today. It's just going to be the two of us. We figured we owe you guys a year in review, is something we typically do at the end of the year, but so this is more of a year in progress. So some of the things we're going to talk about is some of the initiatives within the tactical games, where you've been introducing practical shooting. We're going to talk a little bit about how that's gone for us at the local level. And Matt's going to touch on it from the curriculum and training level, tactical games wide. Talk about, how do you come back into competitive shooting after taking a long break? That's something that both of us have had to do just because of life events and other stuff coming up. And then we're going to talk about giving back, some of the things that Matt and I have been doing to give back at the local level or even the more national level when we're talking about the tactical games. So, I guess the first thing we'll talk about is how performance has been so far this year. So I have shot mostly USPSA, shot one tactical games. Matt, you've done a couple tactical games, but for the most part, you have not been quite as active in the competitive scene. Is that correct?
Yeah, just really haven't been out there much competing, kind of. I don't know, trying to get home life situated, just kind of feel out life outside of the Marine Corps shooting team. And I think a lot of it came down to like the last 4.5-5 years on the team, I did nothing but travel and compete. And I just want to kind of get my life in order and just be around family some before I start hitting it. I don't want to say hitting it hard, but just being more active again.
And starting a new job had a lot to do with that.
Right? Oh, yeah. I don't want to just go into a new job and just start taking all the time off of work. There is, but I've done some competitions here and there. It's been fun. My first big match of this year was a complete debauchery of my capabilities, but we got that sorted and I'm hitting long range like it's cool again.
Nice.
I don't want to go into this past weekend whenever I was at the tactical games, but I mean it was a relatively decent performance.
So, I mean, in terms of what you've been through this year, let's focus on your fitness, because that is most of what you've been dedicated your time and energy to. Most people, honestly, when they get out of the Marine Corps, they tend to kind of fall apart and they don't really have a reason to stay in shape anymore. So they kind of, let themselves go. You've done the opposite. You've experienced quite the renaissance in the wake of your retirement. So, I mean, how is the body feeling at this point? And like, what's keeping you going?
So let's back that up some. I would say the last 4.5 years while on this team, my fitness wasn't necessarily a priority there. Shooting was. I just didn't exercise nearly as much. I turned into, I just joined the three-mile club. While on the team, run 3 miles once a year for the PFT pass, do what I have to do, get a first class. Before that though, I mean, I was working out 2-3 times a day, just, getting after it. But now it's like, I have the time. I want to be in shape. I want to be healthy for not just myself, but for my family. I want to continue to do the things that I'm passionate about and that I love. And I just want to be in it, in a sense, if you want to call it an inspiration, to help others, see their goals and see that just because they get out of the military, they don't have to forget the things that they were once passionate about.
And also going out there and killing it at the tactical games is also a pretty good incentive too.
Yeah, no, it is. You have to perform at a high level, to be good at that. And I mean, it's just given me that confidence boost. It's given me, like I said, the confidence. It's given me a sense of purpose.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, you've done great things since you retired, and I think you're gonna continue to stay active, continue to push what you're capable of. And it's great, right? Like honestly, I'm the same way. Tactical games gives me more reason to work out than the PFT or CFT ever does.
Yeah, I
That's what
mean,
motivates me.
yeah, it's like, why am I just going to train for a test? Why not just train for myself? You know, I and you see it in marksmanship too. People, all they do is they train for the test and they don't ever go beyond the test. The test, like, I was listening to Staff Sergeant Germanello's episode today, and it was about, you know, training for proficiency, training for a test, and then just a check in the box. I don't remember the complete specifics, but so often we forget to train for proficiency that all we do is train for a test, and we don't ever see any incentive to reach past the test.
Yeah. No, very well said.
But what about you? You have been killing it, and you've had your ups and downs, but you've honestly been killing it in USPSA. Like, you just came off this weekend shooting Battle for the North Coast.
Yeah,
And
it was a good match. So it's been interesting. Because I started shooting open in earnest back in November, just getting used to the gun. And we already covered it in a previous episode, but Sam and I went to Dragon's Cup. That was a good match for both of us, set the tone for the entire season. And then from there, I'd say the peak was a Mid-Atlantic. I shot like a 92% up against some pretty good GMs. The entire like I recently made a master class, which it has been a goal for a while. It just eluded me because a lot of the either I sucked at the matches that would have counted as classification, or there just weren't enough GMs to bump me up to M class. So I finally got it on the back of some good classifier runs. So my classification is comprised of Dragon's Cup Area 6 and some classifications, which is kind of the way I wanted to match bump, but that's I'm there ultimately. Finally made M class. Sam made M class as well. And yeah, we'll talk about it in the next subject. But I think the bigger story is like having taken close to a month off, going to Italy, spend time with the wife, spend time with their family, and then coming back and just like the cobwebs that develop, and trying to get back into that groove has been pretty challenging.
what exactly, like, I know you get out of, you go on vacation, you get out of a routine, you don't have your guns to dry fire, you're eating more, you're not exercising. How did all that compound to not necessarily to equate to poor performances, or to challenge yourself to step it up and step up your training?
Yeah, I honestly did as much as I could to keep the ship running while I was gone. So I brought the gun up to my in-laws' house and I dry fired there until the day that we left for Italy. I actually did work out when I was in Italy. I brought a jump rope. It's something that JJ Rakaza preaches, like something to help with footwork, and also like it helps me target my bum ankle a little bit. Like I'll just do hops in that one leg. So for example, in Venice, where the alleyways are really narrow and you can't really just go run around because you're going to crash into like old Italian ladies and you're going to send their biscotti flying everywhere. Yeah, I would just go by the waterside and I would just jump rope for 20 minutes. I went running whenever I could because even when I'm on vacation, I still like to go jogging. I think it's a really good way to see the city. You're not going to see as much of the landscape taking a subway or a bus or just a car. I just like to go and run. So I would find parks, and Italians love their dogs. So I would just go and like scope out dog parks and just like, you know, just see what everyday life, that's one of the joys of traveling for me, is seeing what everyday life is like. So I was still physically active because I didn't want it to be like, I get back from vacation, I put on all this weight because I've been eating nothing but like gelato and like delicious pasta. I watched a lot of match videos. Like that was during Karyopics Nationals. People were still shooting majors. And I watched them very analytically. I thought about shooting a lot. I just, you know, I enjoyed my time over there. But when we're at the Airbnb and just like kind of chilling out, waiting for like, you know, dinner reservation in the evening or whatever, I was pulling up YouTube and I was watching match videos. I got like a playlist of USPSA footage that's like 250 videos. It's just random people putting up their videos, and I just put it in a playlist so I can go back and I can review it over and over again. And then once we got back in the States, I picked up the gun immediately. I would say the biggest barrier to me getting back into it, not having the gun while I was abroad, but also the fact that my main gun went down and I had to get used to a new one. Like that was difficult. That's what's taken me most of this last month to like get together.
What exactly is it? I mean, obviously the hand controls are going to be more, they're going to be the same, but is it the feel of the grip? What from that gun?
In this particular case, the gun that went down was a 38 Super Comp with, it was very front heavy. Like I opted for like no slide cuts and a full dust cover.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just honestly having shot like lighter guns, I think lighter guns are the way to go for open. But I was just really, that was the gun that I shot, you know, Dragon's Cup with, Delmarva Area 6, Maryland State. I was just really comfortable with it. So yeah, it's still 2011 when you switch to a new one, but the weight is different. The fuel is different. The way it recoils. I switch dots, like a lot of things, the magwell, like, but you actually just made me think of something else interesting. Is like, if you have, when you're operating, when you're shooting really well, you have cues, right? Like in a reload, I have to look at the magwell. Otherwise the mag will go somewhere else and I'll botch a reload, even as big as the 2011 magwell is. And just having those written down so that when you do get back to the gun, like where, like what part of my hand is touching my holster at the start position, right? Little things like that, just to ease my transition back into it. But yeah, I was, yeah, the new gun definitely took, I just wasn't comfortable. The biggest thing was that I kept bumping the safety on accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, for me, for long breaks, I actually feel like sometimes I come back stronger. And I kind of noticed it after whenever I was, you know, coming off the bullseye pistol, and we, you know, I started shooting three gun again. And I made, that was my back, being back to my main discipline, like I felt a lot fresher. I felt a lot cleaner. I felt a lot more capable. I trusted my sights. I could call my shots. And a lot of that was indicative to just focusing on the fundamentals for so long. But then, you know, this year I haven't been shooting nearly as many majors. I haven't been traveling. I've shot some locals here at Quantico Shooting Club. I've shot some locals down at Zoo City Armory. And one thing I've noticed, and I attribute a lot of this to my fitness, and kind of going back to whenever I was on the team, my fitness game wasn't always there. But like Alex told me, he's like, he said he watched my videos we shot together at PCSL, and he straight up said, he's like, your footwork is nothing like what it used to be. It is so much better. And a lot of that, I would have to say, come because I don't practice footwork anymore. It's just I'm out there moving around a lot more. And
it's just being an athlete.
I am a lot more athletic now, and I'm able to trust what I need to do. You know, this past weekend, I was upset with one of my stages because I felt like I was in a flow But then I got knocked off the flow, and I knew immediately that took about 2 to 3 seconds off my time. I come off the stage and I'm not upset, but I am upset, and I'm like, motherfucker, like that could have been 2 to 3 seconds faster. And like one of the ROs was like, that was the best run of the day for this side of the match, like for this specific portion of the stage. And I was just like, yeah, but it could have been 2 to 3 seconds faster.
Yeah, because you know what you're ceiling. There's sometimes a feeling of disappointment when you come off the line knowing that you didn't perform up to your potential.
Yeah.
That's what you're feeling.
Yeah. But I mean, shooting the PCSL match that occurred, what, 2 months ago or so? Yeah, it was about 2 months ago.
Yeah, July.
Yeah, back in July. And I felt great. I was moving. I was performing. I could have performed a little bit better, but at the same time, and this is going to kind of come into later on in the episode, I was also coaching a lot more and I was helping prepare other people. So when your focus isn't solely on shooting and you have more of an outward focus for other people, your performance just isn't there nearly as much.
Yeah. You touched on an interesting point, and that's that you've been working out a lot. You've been getting a lot more in tune with your body, and that's translated one, I think, into confidence, right? That's where the footwork comes from, just like moving aggressively. But also, right, you have that connection to how your body works, how things feel. And honestly, shooting and moving, a lot of that is just disconnecting the shooting from everything else, the footwork. So yes, I do think sometimes you can tell when someone's thinking through their footwork. It doesn't look natural. It's like when Marines think too much about marching and they end up like synchronizing the arm with that leg, and it's just like, it looks goofy as shit. You can't think about it. It's something that we as human beings do so naturally. You just move, and then the sights tell you when to press the trigger.
Yeah.
There's more to it, but yeah, no, that's, it's, I think it's for us as Marines, but also for everyone else in competition shooting. Shooting should not be the only physical thing you do. You should be in tune with your body through other means as well.
Another thing we've both been focusing on a lot is the give back. You've been instructing, you've been helping guys on the team with reloading. You've just been present more around the team. What has that been like this year?
It's been really great. I mean, I was present last summer, but I think me and the guys were all just kind of feeling each other out. And from my perspective, I'm not a part of the team. I travel with them, but I kind of had to approach it a different way. I'll get a lot of benefits, right? I get to practice on Quantico. I get to squad with the Marine Corps shooting team. Sometimes we share hotel rooms, sometimes we share cars, and those are a lot of things that I'm very grateful for, because otherwise I'd be paying for them on my own. So from my perspective, it's important for me to be able to offer something back to the team. And it comes in different ways. You mentioned that, I brought them all to my house. We're in the basement. I taught every single one of them how to load ammo. I walked through the entire process from brass processing to what each station on the 750 does. And they all rolled 100 rounds, and that's important to me. One, because I had to learn all my own. And I messed up a lot in reloading. But all those guys are, they're eventually going to get out or move away from the team. And reloading is the cheapest way to stay in the sport. It just is. And also, if you're really competitive, you want to be able to control ammo as a variable. Other things, like when I went up to Mid-Atlantic, I went up on Friday when they were shooting staff day. And I just hung out with them and helped reset the stage with them, and then once in a while, if I see them doing something good, or if I see something that they just need to focus on, I'll go and tell them. I'm kind of careful with that, because I know from the enlisted perspective, like sometimes most of the time, the last thing you want is some rando officer coming up and giving you his opinion, because that unfortunately happens a lot from my side.
Yeah, but you're not just a rando officer. I think, you know, in many cases, like, we look at team as family. And I think very much so that you are part of a family now within that team.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I also, I think part of it too is like, I don't want to be super presumptive, you know, because at the same time, I'm not a part of the unit.
And I guess I can say this because I've experienced it from guys on the team, but guys on the team can be prima donna bitches too at times. And it, you know, but that's the competitive side of us.
Yeah.
We're very focused. I'm not saying they're like that, not one bit. That's how the old team was.
Yeah, I think this specifically, you know, I did shoot with the action team, and I've shot a lot with the pistol team. They're all very even keeled. They all understand that, like, the last thing anybody wants, like, it, they can't be seen throwing tantrums and that kind of stuff while wearing that uniform.
And that I'm not going to say that was a common occurrence back then, but it did occur at times, behind closed doors, of course. Yeah.
I'd say there's another level to it. Like, I've seen videos of, like, people straight up, like, raging in the middle of a stage, or just, like, I saw a video once of a guy who got DQ'd, and he's just, like, he was, like, stomping his foot and being like, oh, man, this is, like, I think that looks terrible from outsiders. Like,
yep.
People who know nothing about the shooting sports see grown men and women throwing tantrums with guns in their hands, and it makes all of us look like shit.
Oh yeah, I've experienced that. I've never seen anybody on the team that has ever done that. And if I was in charge of the team and I saw somebody do that, like, they'd have a boot up their ass. Yeah. But I saw that this year with a specific shooter. I won't name names. And that person, you know, they made themselves look like an idiot. It was uncalled for and not needed. Another person I saw do it, and they were representing another team, and this was a couple years ago, and I was embarrassed to be around it. Like, straight up, what that person did, they should have been DQ'd out of the match for unsportsmanlike conduct. And that is a beautiful rule, because, you know, if you're not acting like a true sportsman in a discipline that requires, you know, a certain level of maturity, you do not deserve to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely, like, I think throwing something in anger should just automatically, like, that's unsportsmanlike. It's, you're throwing off the emotional vibes for your squad too. Like, nobody wants to be around that person. Nobody wants to dedicate any of their emotional energy when they're there for their own personal performance to calming someone else down. It just, you know, we're all adults. I did just think of something. If I could shift back the subject real quick, just in terms of, like, coming back after a long break, mindset. Like, I think this is, like, the first year where I felt like I was actually good at shooting. I know it's not entirely, you're going to tell me that, you know, that's not entirely true. But this is, like, the first.
You've hit a level of consistency to where it's, you don't feel as if I did this out of luck or this was just happen chance.
Right.
This is occurring more and more often. And I, you know, one of the things Germ said, but me and Go King had a conversation about this about a week or two ago. It's called the flow state. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really, you know, he sent me this caption and I can post it. You know, we can post this whenever we release this episode as well. But, you know, when you have a challenge level that's low and a skill level that's low, you have apathy, worry, and anxiety.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Whenever you have a challenge level and a skill level that's in the medium area, you have boredom and arousal. When you have a high skill level and a high challenge level, you're in your flow state, you're in control, and you're relaxed. And that's something, you know, I've hit every now and again. Certain matches, I will be in a flow state, and it's almost as if it's just, it's almost you're seeing everything from a third perspective or third person view, and you are not in control. Like, you are in control, but you're just observing everything that occurs.
Yeah.
It's
all subconscious. Yeah. It feels really good when that happens. And you know, going back to what you mentioned earlier, you said you had that stage at the games this last weekend and something went wrong and it threw you off. Like, you were pretty close to getting there, weren't you? Like, mm-hmm. up until that point. Yeah. And then something happens. Either it's you have to come back for a steal, or your gun malfunctions, and then it's like, it's gone. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, for me, it's having shot so many majors, kind of figuring myself out mentally. And I'll throw that slew of matches, the RPGI day and night, the championships, the tactical games in Florence. And basically, by the time I hit Mid-Atlantic is where it really came together. It's just I stepped up at every stage, and I was just like, I'm going to kill it. Like, there was absolute confidence. And I will say that, like, I tried to emulate that at Western PA. That was the first major when I came back, but it just wasn't there because I had just picked up my new gun 2 days before. I just shot at the range 300 rounds. I chronoed it. And the very first stage, like, I shot out of sequence. I forgot a target, had to go back to it. I messed something else up, and I was like, it's not there right now. Like, we can't force it if it's not there. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to be really, really specific about the details we're rehearsing, and we are going to try to build confidence. Like, that from that first stage, my approach to the match, which is usually go and fucking destroy it, changed. It was just like, let's just try to find the consistency back. Let's build up the confidence instead of trying to push and possibly undermine it, you know, mm-hmm. Which would be counterproductive. But yeah, I mean, Western PA was the end of July, and then I shot Battle like this last weekend. That was about 3 weeks later, and I feel like I'm finally there.
That's good.
Yeah, but it just takes time, right? Like, Scott Rader said something last summer, because I think a lot of the guys on the team are dealing with this in different ways. He said confidence is everything. And, you know, it's typical. You say something super simple, but in the practicality of it is that it's, you can't go in with false confidence. It's something you build up over training. You earn it. You earn the right to, like, feel that way. You prove to yourself that you have a reason to feel that way. But I'd say there's another side to it, and that's that you go into every stage with absolute confidence, like that specific level of excitement and, like, presentness that you were talking about in that flow state. But then afterwards, like, you let that shit go and you become analytical. You know, it's like, what went wrong? Like, it's, you can't be on the high for too long, because then you'll just stagnate. So it's been interesting. I think the cycle of, like, training and competing and validating and finding new things to work on is really, I mean, it's fun. That's the fun in it. You know, it's, mm-hmm. it's also that you get to do with your friends and that you get to go travel places, but really, like, it's the constant self-improvement. That's what's been great this year.
Yeah. In terms of my give back, you know, I've been handling, you know, reaching out to sponsors for different matches that I help out, specifically like Zeus City. You know, I love Jason Byerly, you know, to death. He's one of the most giving guys in the shooting sports.
Yeah.
Puts on phenomenal matches. And if I can even just help out a little bit, you know, I can't help out with time anymore being an RO for a match, because it's just it does take up a lot of time, and I just don't have the vacation time, and I'm not on the team to where I can just travel and RO. But if I can do, you know, one thing I'm good at, it is kind of networking, and it's yeah. kind of reaching out to people. So, you yeah. know, if I can help out in that sense, I will, you know, and I did that for the Duskin match. You know, and that's something that is extremely important to me. You know, it's a memorial match. It's something that's special. And that's kind of where I've been doing my give back, and then also teaching people. You know, me and a friend, Jay Schaaf, we've talked on many levels, and, you know, I think whenever I first started teaching, I felt a level of imposter syndrome, where it's like, I am not the best guy out there. But then he's like, yes, but you're a good shooter, and you do have a lot of information to give. And maybe it's just me, a level of humility. You know, I feel I have to be the best, but I know I'm not the best. And I'm never going to be, you know, I'm never going to be a JJ Ricasa. I'm never going to be a Daniel Horner. And you know what? That's fine. But if I can help coach people to gain a level of confidence in their abilities, I know I've done something right.
Yeah, I think that's kind of linked to the confidence I was talking about before. I think if you really do have the competitive spirit that we're talking about, you are going to feel some level of imposter syndrome, because you know, you're aware that you're continually, like, you know you got to go and earn it every single day, right? Mm-hmm. But I've also seen a lot of, like, shooters that I hold in very high regard, notably like Ben Faust. He told me that he doesn't think he has any right teaching. I'm like, that's not true, dude. Like, I think, like, you understand the fundamentals, but also you're very articulate. Like, there's other things that go into teaching, right? Mm-hmm. And I would say the same having taught with you. Like, I think, you know, you and I were both on the same page, and I think we meant to talk about this in the beginning, but we introduced practical shooting to some shooters who mostly did tactical game static level shooting, and they really took to it, and I think they've progressed immensely as competitors, as shooters, as a result.
Yeah, no, and you know, one thing I'll say is, like, you know, whenever you and I taught that one time, the month prior, I kind of did an intro to action shooting, and when I did that, you know, I had some various drills that we had to teach, and I had some spicy steel out there. And, you know, before I even started shooting, I was like, man, I haven't practiced and I haven't shot in like a month, man. I hope I don't fuck this up. And I knew I wouldn't, but it was like, I haven't rehearsed or really practiced this. But you know, whenever you get out there and you just do it and it all clicks, kind of like getting in your flow state, it feels really good. And then it's like you impress these people, and you're not really doing it to impress them. In a sense you are, in another sense you're not. It's that performance on demand. So the type of mental focus that you have to have while instructing is the same mental focus that you have to have while competing. So it forces you to get back into that mindset. And when you're done with it, you're like, yep, I performed, and I just validated my credibility to them.
Yeah.
And I think validating credibility to your students through performance is extremely important. And I know we talked about this with Mike Pannone. Yeah. As an instructor, you need to be out there performing and demonstrating. Otherwise, you're a fraud.
Right. The good thing about instructing is, like, you know, did you rip the demo, and you know, you don't need to shoot your 100%. You just need to be consistent, and it needs to apply the principles and the fundamentals that you are telling your students. But then after that, you kind of kick back and you just watch your students and you give them feedback. And mm-hmm. I don't know, that's, I kind of, you know, you talked about mentoring some new shooters at PCSL. I did it at USPSA. And you know, if I wasn't so worried about like trying to get back into my own like competitive edge, it probably would have been a lot more enjoyable. It still was enjoyable, but like, mm-hmm. you know, you do your own thing and then you go and help other people. And at the end of the day, you're pretty exhausted, but it's honestly very rewarding.
Yeah. And your performance isn't as high as you wished it would be, but when you see their progress,
yeah,
it gives you that motivation that yeah. I want to keep helping.
It, when you see new shooters basically make like the things that took you like months to figure out and they do it in a match, that's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Really no, it's stuff. Exciting. Like, yeah. You know, I'll talk about this now, just like this past weekend, you know, I did compete at the Tactical Games team event and we had, I want to say 9 teams like through the Penguin Pack. And for those wondering what the Penguin Pack is, like, it's Penguin Pack Fight Club is a training group that myself and other friends are a part of. A good friend of mine started it. You know, make fun of the name all you will. It's a good group of people, and we just want to go out there and help other people who participate in the tactical games. And, you know, seeing my students out there and being on the line competing with my students, because like half of them was with competing with like Carla, the other half were competing with me. And it was really cool to be on the same line as them, competing with them or watching them because they were the heat behind me, and just mm-hmm. see their progress and like just coaching them. Hey, this is the, do this way, because, you know, on the shooting portion, I wouldn't coach them on the fitness portion, but on the shooting stuff, I'd be like, hit this stage like this, you know, you're, you know, for the steel, it was kind of like a semi-steel challenge. Not really. You were shooting static from one position, like getting out of a car, and there were 12 steels out there in various sizes, about 25 yards away, you know, following the berm in an L shape. And there were some that were 6-inch, some that were 12-inch. And, you know, one thing I will say about steel is it's going to make or break you, because it's you hit it or you don't, and you mm-hmm. have to do a makeup shot or you don't. And it can get quite frustrating, you know, when this is your first time, you know, at a match and other people are watching you. And even for me, like, I was up on the line and whenever I had to shoot, and it's not that I haven't performed in front of other people, but now I'm also performing in front of people I have taught. And it's like, I better put on a performance. I better put on a show that mm-hmm. is going to make them proud to be like, that's my instructor. So, you know, me being able to do that, and it was kind of cool because at the end, after I got done shooting, like, people were cheering and clapping, and like, you know, a lot of those people have never seen, I'm assuming, have never seen anybody really shoot that fast and that accurate before. So yeah. That was kind of cool. But then going to see Joe and Kelly, two of the students, like, they performed exceptionally well. And I just told Kelly, was really worried about it. And you know, she was like, I'm really nervous about this. I was like, Kelly, just go out there, line your sights up, line your dot up on that target, be deliberate about each trigger press. That way you don't have the makeup shots, and just be fast on your transitions. And she went out there and she did that, and she came off and she was like super excited. I was like, there you go.
Yeah.
Is that validation?
Yeah. I got a question. Do you find, in terms of competitive pressure, what you just described is like, I would say, the pressure of living up to other people's expectations, like, you know, people that look up to you as a mentor, as a teacher. And I think there's the other side of it is that you are trying to keep up with people that are ahead of you. Which type of pressure do you think is more productive for you? Because for me, it's the first.
Yeah. I never really thought of it that way, but I would have to say the first as well. Like,
yeah.
It's the one that gets you. It's the one I felt whenever I first got to the shooting team, like, I better perform. And you know what? Whenever I first got to the team, I didn't. you know, and that's when I felt absolute imposter syndrome. Like I felt I should not be there. And quite honestly, if it, looking back on my abilities back then compared to now, is back then I should not have been on the team. But you know, I was there and I found different ways to where I can improve the team from an administrative level. And I used my abilities as an administrator and as a networker to improve the team. And then I improved my abilities at the same time. But in terms of type of pressure, it is living up to others' expectations and being proud that having them proud to say that's the person who taught me something.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know where that comes from. That happened in the Florence Tactile games, that happened at Mid-Atlantic. Like I didn't know anyone in that squad, but through the middle of it, they were just like, dude, you're killing it. And that little bit of affirmation really, really helps. It really goes a long way. But I guess from my end, it's also, you know, being an older brother. That's essentially it, right? Like,
yeah,
you're expected to act like the oldest, you're expected to be a certain way. And I don't know, and I guess I may have resented it when I was a kid, but now it's like, it's kind of who I am.
Well, it's also being that mentor. You know, granted, I've had 20 years of experience in the Marine Corps, and you know, let's call it at least 15 of those years, because like the first 4 to 5 years don't count because you're still learning, you know, your place in the Marine Corps. But let's call it 15 years of mentoring and coaching people. And even then, I don't think you really start to develop as that mentor until about 10 to 12 years in the Marine Corps. I you know, on the enlisted side, like, I think that's when you get in your flow state. It happens a lot sooner, but it's on a different level. But as you start to grow older and mature and really start to mentor Marines, you become more conscious of that level. So
I mean, you're basically developing as a coach.
Yeah.
I'd say you're dead on. The first part, that first enlistment or the first 4 years, is about learning. Do your job. That's what people want from a private lance corporal. If you can't do your job, then you're worthless to the institution. Mm-hmm. But after you've had some time under your belt, you are expected to then be the person teaching or mentoring other people so they can be optimal at their jobs. That's not a transition that everyone makes, right?
No.
Like some people are just, they're good at their jobs and that's it. They don't really transition to the management side.
No.
Yeah.
So, you know, where I was kind of taking this is, you know, this may have only been my fourth tactical games, but all I've done is team events thus far, but being a veteran in the shooting sports, you know, I can take a bunch of a lot of previous experiences from different disciplines. And, you know, one of the guys, you know, that is a very capable shooter, his team got disqualified on one of the stages. He didn't do anything wrong. It was his partner, but the team itself got disqualified. And so I was able to take, I went up to the match staff and I was just like, look, obviously you know what the situation is, but can we keep this one person who didn't disqualify and do anything wrong, can we still keep them in the match? That way, you know, not for score or anything, just to continue performing so they get that experience. And so they can still have fun and let him grow, learn, and experience the rest of the match as it is. And I was like, it's not going to affect any of the scores. He's not going to be competing against anybody else. And in the end, it allowed two other people to stay in the match at the same time. So it's taking that big brother approach, that fatherly approach in a sense, I guess you can say, and just, you know, seeing a situation for what it is and trying to make the best of it and try and improve somebody else's experience, because that's how you are going to keep people coming back.
Yeah. And from the business side, it makes sense. Like, that person didn't do anything wrong. They shouldn't be held accountable for their partner's mistakes, but give them their money's worth, because then they'll be more likely to come back and go to another games. Speaking of which, now that you're, how's been, you're essentially shaping curriculum and advising more heavily on the games now. And how's that been? I mean, it's part of the give back. I mean, you are being compensated in certain ways, but really, like, it's mainly a volunteer position.
Yeah, and it's been rather cathartic, because, you know, I do understand how curriculum should be developed. I do have the experience, and so, as James Gill would put it, I wrote a freaking Bible in a matter of 3 days. And, you know, I geeked out on Adobe and design, and I love computer programs and audiovisual and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I really did geek out. And in 3 days, I came up with a curriculum. And it's my way, you know, of helping the tactical games out and helping develop shooters through the tactical games in-person training program, because we have the tactical games affiliate, but I wanted to connect the affiliate training to the university, to the training camp. That way everybody is teaching on the same program, off the same curriculum. So that has been fun, and it kind of was the same stuff that I used for the Penguin Pack. I added a bunch more. I built it out for more or less the rest of the year. And it's been really good. You know, me and James Gill were out there this past Friday before the team event, and I just showed up and I was just like, hey, where do you need me? Like, I wasn't getting compensated for being out there. I just wanted to go out there and help him, you know, as an alternate, and help the shooters and utilize my experience to help them. And, you know, that's kind of how we ran it.
Yeah. So I was super excited finding out that you were going to be able to shape a style of shooting within the tactical games. And I guess from like the from Nick and everyone else, does it seem like the games is embracing all the other disciplines and forcing, like, not forcing, but telling its competitors to go out there and see what else is out there and then bringing it back to the games in order to make everybody better?
You know, I will say that, you know, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but the games is still going to have its very traditional style of competition. It's still going to have the precision side of it, but it's also going to have the TAC-2 gun, multi-gun type of side to it. So it's giving you a couple different disciplines, which is kind of my background, considering I've shot Bianchi, I've shot Bullseye, and I've shot USPSA and three gun. So I'm able to kind of put all that into a curriculum that's going to shape people from the very beginning of the curriculum of developing their fundamentals into gaining that practical accuracy side, and then kind of shaping them to where, how do you switch off between one discipline and another? Because let's be real, it's not easy to transition from shooting a bullseye style discipline to an action style, because one, you're very heavily focused on your trigger control and sight alignment, whereas the other one, it's your grips and your sights. And it's being able to switch between those and understand the styles of shootings that you have to perform.
Yeah. No, it's good. I've said this a lot, but I'm happy about the direction, and I'm excited about the direction the game is going in terms of marksmanship.
Mm-hmm. And Nick even said it himself. And for those who are wondering who Nick is, we did previously record an episode back around Christmas time, and it was released in January. But we did you know, Nick Thayer, who is the president, well, he's the owner of the Tactical Games. He said it himself this past weekend. Hey, there are a bunch of shooting disciplines out there. There are clubs out in the local areas. Go shoot your local clubs. Why? Because it's going to make you a better shooter. You know, anybody can go to a gym. Anybody can work out anytime they want. But the one thing that people lack the most, and this is me saying this and not Nick, but the one thing you don't get enough time on, unless you're like the Marine Corps shooting team, the Army Marksmanship Unit, you know, or you have a range in your backyard and all the expendable ammo, is the one thing that most people are lacking is that range time. So, you know, the Tactical Games has their dry fire program, you know, which Sal runs, you know, do that. Or if you don't want to spend that money, go get a Ben Stager book and go practice in your garage reading out of a book. That is a very optimal choice, cost-productive choice. You know, I have targets set up in my garage, and I kind of know where my strengths and weaknesses are, but that comes down to experience, and I can just go out there and practice whenever I want. So just go out there and shoot the different disciplines that are there. You know, preferably, you know, mine and Frank's recommendation would be USPSA and three-gun or two-gun. PCSL, which, you know, I know Sig Sauer Academy, for the guys up in the Northeast, Sig Sauer Academy is going to be hosting PCSL matches up there now. So go out there, shoot those disciplines, because it's only going to make you a better shooter.
Yeah, I'd say it makes sense from expanding the games too. If you get more people from the tactical game side going out and representing well in these other disciplines, then, I mean, we've all been to USPSA matches and three-gun matches where you kind of see, like, the tactical Timmies, or you see the guy who's like, oh, man. We're talking about the guy who was, like, obviously in shape.
Yep.
And, like, I've had guys say to me, like, I wish this was more physical. And you could be like, hey, I know of a format that you would probably enjoy that involves shooting like this, but is also extremely physical. So it's all about, like, it's all about cross-pollination. It's all about exposing people to what's out there. And I still do think the Tactical Games does have some legacy stereotypes out there in the shooting community that is struggling to overcome just because of the way it was in the beginning.
Yeah. The reason why I kind of, you know, made this sound I did when you said Tactical Timmy, it just reminds me of the first match I ever shot up at Thurmont in Maryland, and seeing a guy there dressed out in a lot of guys dressed out in this weird freaking camos, their LBVs, and one dude had like an M4 or an M16.
Was that the match we went to?
No, this was, it wasn't that match specifically, but this one dude had like a grenade launcher, a 37 millimeter grenade launcher on his rifle. And it's just like, dude, what the fuck? Like, quit being a LARPer.
But I want to win my next airsoft meet. it's funny. Man, we shit on Thurmont a lot, but I promise you guys, it's warranted. I'll talk real quickly about the stuff I've been doing to give back. So Matt, the Penguin Pack has, you know, taken me on as an instructor a couple times. So I did one with Matt where we did practical shooting. And then I helped Rob and Katie out when everyone else was gone. We just ran some battles, stages. And man, honestly, I thought I was going to show up and just like be like a stage manager or like an RO. I ended up teaching a lot about barricades. I guess it's another part of instructing. Like I assumed that the stuff I knew was so common knowledge, but it was blowing people's minds. And, you know, I was happy to explain it. And I'm happy that, unlike me, they wouldn't have to learn it at a tactical games for the first time, like have a barricade eat their lunch. So that's been really great. I appreciate you guys having me along there. And then the other thing is that I officially took over as the match director on Quantico. Ran my first match this month. It went well, USPSA. And it's a lot of work, like putting the stages on the ground, getting the tablets ready to go. But I have a great crew, like Alex Goking, super good stage designer, very hardworking dude. John Treat helped out with stats, like syncing tablets, and like those guys made me look pretty good for the first time. It was fun, you know, like at the end of the day, you got to see shooters walking home just looking happy because they just spent a day out at the range with their buddies. Like, and it's kind of interesting seeing that from the match director perspective. And then, I mean, it comes with its share of headaches, but it's good work. I find it meaningful work. It also, when you tell people you're a match director in the USPSA crowd, they kind of, I mean, it enables like connections with other MDs. Mm-hmm. Something I've noticed, I've just had an easier time like making contacts at the majors I've been to and all that. So it's been good.
One thing, and I only talked to a couple people about this. I'll say it here, and nothing set in stone, and it's just something I'd like to see, and I think I'm going to try and tackle this next year with all the time I don't have, because I just like I like to continue to compound things on top of myself. But one thing I do want to see come back is one of the matches I really enjoyed every year was the Mid-Atlantic Three Gun Championship. It was, you know, I would say it was a major minor match up in the Pennsylvania area. And I would love to see a match like that format, like another Mid-Atlantic Three Gun Championship come back. And I'm going to be talking to some friends and, you know, trying to garner the support to see if we can bring something like that back to the Mid-Atlantic area, because it would just it'd be nice to see a major match that's relatively close to Virginia Quantico area be back. You know, where it's going to be, I don't know, like it's in its infancy, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's always demand for quality matches.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'd certainly be welcome. The people in this area definitely want more multi-gun.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's stuff that I'm going to be working on. We'll see what happens. And yeah, hopefully we can make it a reality.
Yeah, for sure. But at this point, you know, we've talked about a lot of different things. Is there anything else that you'd like to wrap up with?
No, I just, you know, I hope you guys really enjoyed this, and, you know, let us know what you want to hear, you know, and if you are enjoying, leave a comment, leave us a rating, get in contact with us, you know, it all helps.
Yes. In terms of content, next week, we will be rolling out a review of the Tactile Games team event between Matt and his partner, Ian. And then the following episode, we know we're at episode 100, so we're going to be bringing back an old guest from the very beginning that we're going to have on, and that's going to be this special 100th episode. But we do appreciate you guys listening. We're watching the listen counts go up and up, and our social media presence has grown, and that's all due to the support and love that you all have shown us. So thank you so much. You know, we enjoy doing this anyway, but the fact that people are enjoying listening to us is definitely a feather in our cap. And like Matt said, just leave us a review, let us know what you want to hear about, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Oh, and hey, for the 100th episode, we are going to be doing a giveaway. And, you know, we'll announce what it's going to be on Instagram. Actually, I'll just announce it here. It's going to be a handguard from Double Star Rifles. But, you know, in order to be part of that giveaway, drop us, you know, give us a rating on any of the host sites you listen to your podcast through. And if it's Apple, if you could leave us a review, a written review. But once you get that done, shoot us a message. If you were part of previous reviews, we still have those. We still know who you are. Just if you could, you know, reach out to us through Instagram and shoot us a message. That way We know you left it, and we can put you part of that pool of people that are going to be in for the drawing. But other than that, thank you for listening and have a great one.